Sustainable development is not an option, it is an imperative. Earth Odyssey is an international organization that aims to research, collect, and present solutions to inspire and empower the ones responsible for educating the children who will lead the world in the future. This is a podcast extracted from the webinar with panelists from around the world.
Webinar 3, People, Harmony, Peace.
Hello to everybody. It's Yuri Sanada. I'm talking from Brazil. I'm here to introduce Mr. Mahendra Shah. On this first webinar, we'll be talking about people, harmony, and peace. We have panelists from different areas, 7 countries, I think, 7 different places of the world. But to start, let's talk to Dr. Mahendra Shah. He's a renowned specialist in sustainability. He's been working on that for many, many years. Mr. Mahendra, please.
Thank you. Welcome, distinguished panel members and everyone online. We have a lot of people already logging in. We have 9 presentations, about 90 minutes time spot. So panel, please make your remarks in 5 minutes, giving us some 45 minutes for discussion and chat answers. We have the option to go beyond 90 minutes if you are energized. The 6 main components of the Earth Odyssey mission is a world of sustainable humans, sustainable nature. This comprises of people, harmony, sustainability, development, and peace. These 6 components relate to sustainable humans and sustainable nature. Each of our series of webinars will take a combination of some of these 6 components to build a sustainability actions framework to secure the future for all. The webinar topic for today is people, harmony, and peace. Sustainable development is not an option, it is an imperative. People everywhere must start adopting sustainable lifestyles with responsible consumption, as otherwise there will be no harmony and no peace anywhere. We are experiencing the tragedy of the COVID-19 pandemic, whilst on the horizon lingers catastrophic risks of climate change, extinction of species, and oceanic poisoning, all of which originate from people in disharmony and disrespect of nature. Surely with the suffering and fear around the world from the pandemic, we never want to go through this again. Now, people diversity is actually the wealth of humanity. This diversity is our heritage, our uniqueness, our individuality, our source of harmonious relationships, innovations, experiences. It gives us creativity, knowledge, intellectual development, emotional stability, ethical behavior. All these things mean that we, people of this world, beautiful as we are, as you can see on this slide, should be living in harmony. So why? Why do we in this world have racism, fanaticism, gender discrimination, ethnicity, poverty among plenty? Is it self-interest? Is it selfishness? Is it materialism and greed? Is it our love of dominating power? We elect our political leaders, and as soon as they are in position, they are preoccupied by re-election. And the drivers of business focus on maximum profits and maximum publicity for the relatively small acts of corporate responsibility. Culture is the real heritage of humankind. And yet, people are more and more being blown away by foreign and modern culture. When you lose your culture, you lose your heritage, because that is the wealth inherited. Let us consider the rich and poor divide. How did the rich get rich? Why the poor stay poor? Why the rich poor gets wider and wider? Geographical and political borders in our interdependent world will not keep out the destitute when they have nothing more to lose than their lives. They are seeking a future for their family. Global climate catastrophe. No later than the lifespan of the youth alive today is on the horizon. we must recall the Rio 92 principles of polluter pays, differential and common responsibility, and precautionary principle. This slide shows us the amazing imbalance. Europe is twice as much as many of the developing regions in terms of per capita carbon emissions. North America is sevenfold higher than the developing regions. So the issue of climate justice and polluter pays in terms of cumulative emissions, when you look at the cumulative emissions that are already, it's cumulative emissions is what drives climate change. And when you take Europe and North America, around 60%, although the data is from 2001, have contributed 60% of the cumulative pollutions. So climate will impact hardest on the poor, and they contributed the least to the causes. Developed countries cleared their forest and burned coal to develop. Developing country priority is to develop. We all get concerned when Brazil deforests the Amazon. The Amazon is a major carbon sink and an air filter for the world. The key is development partnerships, sharing affordable, clean technologies, but we wait, and we've been waiting for 5 decades for this to happen. Developed country mantra is environment. Developing country mantra is development. That abyss, since the 1972 Stockholm Summit, calls for this affordable transfer of technology. Are the rich happy and healthy? Modern lifestyles driven by materialism, greed, power, and pollution are destructive. Emerging burdens of diabetes, cardiac diseases, depression, and cancer have no cure. And we have less and less clean nature to breathe, recharge, and build our immunity. Why is half the world's population discriminated in all spheres of development? What will it take to enable full participation of women with men for a sustainable world? We men talk of empowering women, but we forget that women are naturally empowered as empathetic, caring, considerate, compassionate, and altruistic. These characteristics are critical to heal the divisive world of people. Brute force will never work. All parents must educate at home the children and youth in the school of life to empower the next generation to create a world of sustainable living in harmony with nature. We have the knowledge, we have our humanity, we can prevail. But if we fail, there is no hope for either peace nor development. No health, no satisfaction, no happiness. And that future, no one wants. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Maheda. So who is next?
Keshe Khan, please introduce yourself briefly and you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Hello, everyone. I will begin by sharing my screen. Is my screen visible?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Great. Good morning from Toronto, Canada. My name is Gakisha. I am a United Nations Human Rights Champion, Council Lead of the Toronto St. Paul's Constituency Youth Council. I'm the winner of the 2016 International Children's Peace Prize, National Geographic Young Explorer, the youngest recipient of Canada's Top 25 Women of Influence, and the first ever winner of the Gorbachev-Scholz Legacy Award for my work on nuclear disarmament, and one of the top 100 Sustainable Development Goal leaders in the world. I will be speaking on the interlinkages of people, peace, and sustainability, especially in the current context of untold human suffering and global uncertainty caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. We're now in the age of the Anthropocene, and the human impact on our planet is manifesting itself in ways that we are unable to predict or comprehend. And there are some schools of thought that attribute the origins of the current pandemic to zoonosis, and this may just be the tip of the iceberg. In September, the UN Economics Network released a report called Shaping the Trends of Our Time on the 75th anniversary of the United Nations, which expressed serious concern about the unbalanced growth over the last few decades, where gains in prosperity have almost always come at the cost of environmental degradation, societal strife and damage, lack of peace. And they have also been unequally shared with many people and countries that escaped extreme poverty at a constant risk of slipping back. And the Sustainable Development Goals are the only defined and globally accepted blueprint of action that can mitigate this crisis. And we are already behind schedule at the beginning of this year, and the pandemic has thrown us off completely. Based on this, the report states that there are five human-made megatrends that stand in the way of global efforts to ensure a sustainable and peaceful future, and that called for urgent policy action to prevent these efforts from being thwarted. And these five megatrends, climate change and nature degradation, inequalities, urbanization, rapid population changes, and technological revolution will shape our world over the course of this century. And whether their impact will be positive or negative will depend on the policies that are implemented today. So we are truly at a crossroads where any decisions we take or dither over will determine the prosperity, well-being, and survival of not only future human generations, but also our planet. The pandemic pause is the greatest opportunity of turning things around, shifting the frontier of what is possible. And in the face of this unprecedented crisis, countries are making bold choices to rapidly expand social protection, invest in a green economy, and close the digital divide so that we can build forward better. And we as young people must seize the moment to drive this change and not get distracted by the tokenism that relegates youth to only protesting and striking. We deserve a seat at the table and a voice at every decision-making table, because only then will we be able to change the status quo and ensure a people and planet-centered approach towards creating peaceful and resilient societies. And at my organization, Green Hope Foundation, we work with the world's most marginalized communities, those who have been left behind and forgotten as the world has progressed into the age of digitalization. And among them are children, girls, and women who suffer the most. And the numbers continue to increase. And the most worrying fact is the complete absence of data regarding their numbers and their plight. So our missions as a grassroots social innovation enterprise is to drive change by elevating those who are the farthest first. And we work in both urban and rural areas, keeping in mind that more than half the world's population now lives in cities. And all the urban centers generate most global greenhouse gas emissions and close to half of all waste. Proper planning and control can overcome the damages to the environment and contribute to equity and sustainability. And we use education for sustainable development as a transformative tool to provide these vulnerable and marginalized communities with the knowledge and skills to climb out of poverty and at the same time engage at the highest levels of policymaking in the United Nations processes with parliamentarians and with corporate bodies to raise awareness about these gross violations of human rights and social disparities. And through this combined approach, we work to bridge and narrow the divide and create a just, peaceful, and resilient world where no one is left behind, and ensure a life of dignity for all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Keke Shan. Excellent timing. our next speaker is Upeme, and Upeme is joined our management team. She's also an ambassador for peace. So Upeme, you have the floor.
Greetings to everyone. My intervention will be short. Peace is a determining factor for development, to uphold human rights, and for laying durable foundation for harmony. Personal harmony is of prime importance. If we don't have the personal harmony within ourselves, how can we exude harmony that we seek for the world and the earth system? For an improved society and an improved world, by extension, we need to understand the root causes of human divisiveness and take strategic, sustainable actions. We can do it. Let's do it. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful, Upeme. Next speaker on our list is Cheryl Fisher. She has a wonderful title, Outback Initiatives in Australia, and we all need to get back to nature. Cheryl, you have the floor.
Thank you. Well, that was actually, thank you for the two people before me, the two women before me. It's awesome. I learned heaps as well. So I suppose just quickly, it's 9 o'clock here in Australia, so hello to everybody else. I live in Perth, West Australia, which is the world's most isolated capital city. And at the moment, we're quite glad of that, as you can imagine with the COVID going on. My role in Outback Initiatives is to take people outside of their comfort zone, corporates, local everyday people, take them out onto a country, somewhere remote and rural around Australia. And I've been doing that for about 15 years. So it means, you know, you're without technology. We take the phones away from you and you have to problem solve in groups. And you could be find yourself, say, in a cave in the Kimberleys up the north of Western Australia at 3 a.m, up to your neck in water. And that well and truly puts you outside your comfort zone. But what it also does, it absolutely immerses you in nature. And what I noticed over the 15 years is, I mean, I believe that we actually come from country. We all come from the earth. And when you get back on the earth, it's like something wakes up. Something is dormant inside of us and it wakes up. And I can honestly, literally see it in people's eyes. They've been trapped behind desks and in offices for so long. And then you have them sleeping in the dirt, you know, on their swags and in their sleeping bags and in their tents, and they're cooking on the ground and they're communing. They're living in a communal environment for up to 12 to 23 days. And there's a shift in people's energy and you can see it. So I don't know if you know much about biophilia, but biophilia is the innate connection between nature and man. We are from nature and we've lost that connection, which you know, explains some of the decisions that we're making with regards to the environment. Being in nature, you know, just automatically reduces your stress by 16%. You can feel it when you go outside, you go out for fresh air. You can feel it as part of you. And our challenge, I think, in what we want to change is people's attitudes towards nature. If you take your shoes off and you stand on the lawn or some grass, you can actually feel the ions from the energy of the earth coming through you. It energizes you. We say we're grounded. That's where it comes from. So it's part of my mission in life. I've just developed another company in regenerative leadership to change people's idea and concept around how they see environmental issues. And instead of saying, you know, oh, my gosh, we need to do something about the environment, it's just like in the 80s. So I don't know if any of you remember when we saw the photos for the first time of the starving children in Africa. We were all utterly shocked and it moved us. You know, I remember crying, seeing those things. And then a few years later, it faded into the background. And then now we have the climate issues and we're seeing starving polar bears and we're all shocked and we're spurred to action for a little while. And then it fades into the background again. And so the same as with plastic bags. We were all shocked, probably, when we saw oceans of plastic bags. And now that's become de rigueur as well. It's fading into the background. So it's how do we keep these things in the front of people's lives and in their minds and be relevant without scaring them to death? And I firmly believe we need to take the sort of a heliotropic kind of point of view. So heliotropes, you know, the sun following the sun, flowers following the sun, and show them some positive. So we can say, you know, if we don't change, there's big problems. But we do need to show them that there's technology out there right now and there are ways to do it. So shine them and point them towards the positive things and say that you can make a change. One more thing. Sustainable is good, but we need to think regenerative. So regenerative is about revitalizing, reinvigorating, and repairing. So we need to rethink of these things as the quality of life and not just sustaining what we've got but making it better. That's part of my mission in life. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. And one of the things we are going to do is have 30 to 60 panel discussions around the world, and I hope we can work with Outback to bring the youth to Australia. And I hope the trees will have grown back. Our next speaker is Dusty. And Dusty comes from the Ink Factory. And Dusty, next time, beyond all our words, we hope we can put an illustrative visual team behind the screen. So Dusty, you have the floor. Where is Dusty?
Sorry, I don't think she connected. She's not here now.
I saw her before. Okay, then let us move on to Jean-Paul. Jean-Paul is doing amazing work on sustainocracy in Eindhoven. And it's amazing that this city has turned out to be one of the most sustainable cities in the world. Jean-Paul, you have the floor.
Well, thank you very much, Mahendra, for this introduction. I would certainly hope that Eindhoven would be the most sustainable city in the world. There's a lot to be done still. You mentioned a word that probably nobody knows, which I have invented myself, just to be able to define together what it means to be sustainable, sustainability. If we talk about sustainability with 10 people, we probably find that we have 10 different opinions about what it really means. If we talk about harmony, we probably find that more people do have a sense of what harmony and peace actually mean, especially when we talk about our personal situation. Sustainocracy combines two words, sustainable human progress and democracy. Now, what does that mean? Sustainable human progress. What I do is I place the human being within the natural context that we are talking about. We're talking about our planet. We're talking about nature. But what we do not realize that we as human beings, being human, is being nature ourselves. So if we respect nature and our surroundings, what we do is respect ourselves and we get into harmony with ourselves. We consist for 70% out of water. We breathe about 30 kilos of air every day. What we need to do is be aware of the importance that nature is for us because we actually consist of it. We consist of thousands or millions or billions of little microscopic elements inside our body to work together in harmony with us to try to get us to keep us safe and healthy as a organism. So taking that responsibility brings us to our own resilience to sustain ourselves, not just here, because obviously we have a limited time on Earth individually, but through our children and the children of our children, we do have a sustainable expectation. And right now, what we do with our current life format and the way we govern our system, what we do is we destroy our habitat. And what we do is we destroy ourselves. So what somebody said in the past is we cannot address the problems that we cause with the same way of thinking that actually causes those problems. So we really need a new mindset. And a new mindset is introduced by looking at us as human beings, individually, as me, myself, and everybody who is watching this. You, ourselves, we consist of that nature. And I defined for sustainable human progress five core values. The first one being health. But health is not the absence of disease. Health is also the way we go about nature. Health is going about the way we deal with each other. Health is how we eat, how we feed, how we deal with the air, how we take responsibility for a lot of these kind of things that actually help us in awareness about health. It is not repairing our sickness because of overconsumption. It is taking responsibility well before that for our health and the health of our children, everybody, and our surroundings. The second one is safety. Safety is key to have community, but safety is not being robbed on the street. Safety means respect, for each other, respect for our nature. And a third core value is that we take responsibility together. As a human being, ourselves in our daily life, in our daily choices, and the institutions that we create to help us, not to dominate us, but to help us. Our institutions should be instruments for sustainable human progress. Okay, so that is co-creation. We bring that in together. And then the other value is awareness. It's a learning process. We have to learn together how to do these kind of things, but learning already starts hundreds and thousands of years ago. There's so many experiences that we already had. Let's use these experiences to come to a sustainable progress today and change around our mindset in the institutions, at government, and ourselves to make this happen. And then the things that we need every day, we don't take responsibility. We leave that to the companies, like food, like water, like air, like energy, where if we really look at reality today, we don't really take responsibility personally in a co-creation environment for those core values. We leave it to government, we leave it to institutions that have power positions developed around it and even economics around it, which is a kind of a self-interest, which is blowing up the world. So we have to come back to our nitty-gritty to ourselves and actually take back that responsibility ourselves. Five core values. And that's what I did here in Eindhoven. I started going to the government. I said, hey, I want a healthy city. We are living in the most polluted area of Western Europe. Why are we so having so many industries, so many patterns, so many things that we invent, and we don't care for ourselves in terms of health and air quality? So we set up a joint venture with, together with government and all the institutions here, to work on our healthy environment. And 21 municipalities actually connected to that initiative, which is a citizens' initiative. It is based on the core values that we have lost out of sight over time. Food. We have to go to food resilience, which means that we have to go back to nature and actually work together with nature for our food, but we have to do it ourselves. We can't rely on business.
1 minute, please. Sure.
And then we have established a worldwide participatory learning system, which is the School of Talents. So we actually work together with all the nations to take back that responsibility. And we invite government to do this because government is having difficulties in trying to keep up their responsibility because they're hooked up between the lobbies of the big financial players and their local responsibility. They love, if they get an option to choose, they can actually choose to become part of sustainocracy. But sustainocracy is in the hands of us, human beings, and we have to take that responsibility, and I invite everybody to do that with us together. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean-Paul. Is Captain Willis with us? You pay me? Have you heard from Captain Willis?
I don't think so. I don't think he's here.
I don't think he's here.
All right, then I'm going to move on to Heiner Banking, a very prominent person. In one of the nicest things I read was the 30 Views of Sustainability, and I highly recommend this treatise of what has gone wrong with sustainability. So, Heiner, you have the floor.
Yes, hello, I'm in Berlin. I must tell you, I was a little bit under stress the last few hours because I had intended to show two videos, and then I learned that it's in the program in 2 weeks. It's Jörg Altekruse and Youth for Planet, how to really involve the youth and have them become filmmakers, in-betweeners. And also my pitch on my history the last 30 or 50 years did not work with the audio. So I decided just a moment ago to take out some slides. And can you see them? Can you see the slides?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I go now briefly fast through them, but I don't know why it's not working. So you see, this is happening when you try last minute to do something different. I cannot do a video slide production, and I don't know why. So you see, I'm getting hot. The program is stuck.
Manage without the slide and continue.
Well, would really be a great mind shift. So let me try one more time. Can you see something?
No. We will, in the meantime, we will have time afterwards, Heinrich, because two speakers are missing, so we will give you time later.
Okay, so just let me tell you that I'm working with Youth for Planet to really involve the young people, because just looking at the videos or even shooting them without being the producer and the regisseur, being the conveyor of the whole picture, is not enough. So I wanted to show you a little bit what made me be different after Rio. You see, in the preparation of Rio, we tabled with UIA, Union of International Associations, and UNU, United Nations University, the intersectorial strategic dilemmas, and it's all connected. And we cannot just go to one goal or to one issue, but see the threads between them. And so I was UNEP in 92, and Noel Brown asked me to sum up what we achieved in Rio. And it was not the SDGs, sustainable development, biological diversity, desertification, but he said the common frames of references. And these frames of references, this is actually what I want to show you in my slides, how the MDGs and the SDGs and the function areas of all the issues on the global scale are connected, and how we in a piecemeal mode go on to only one spot and then the next and not go into how to connect them in the deep. So my presentation is very much on the history of what I've been doing And where are the blind spots? What are we leaving out? Where are the deep drivers? Because there we should install some leverage points. And the whole issue is when we don't take goal 17s, not just looking into partnerships, but going into the means and technologies and ways of thinking and being to implement, then we go from one piecemeal goal and solution to the next and not really go to these common frames of references. I would like to leave it by that and see why my slides are not up. So maybe I'll zoom in later.
Thank you. We will have time. There are two questions that came up. Kekesha, your work on sustainable development goals, and Heinrich, you also mentioned this. I have a question that someone has asked online. The question is, what about the interlinkages between the development goals? Because it is the interlinkages which we have not accounted for in almost all the summits and in the MDGs and SDGs. Because we have a target for each goal, but when you take hunger, poverty, education, and health, these are strongly linked. So how are we in the next, we have 5-10 years left to 2030. How are we going to tackle this mountain of putting in the linkages? Because the outcome of any goal will perhaps be dictated more so by the interlinkage than whatever resources we put into it. So if you please comment on this.
I can start with that. Yes, I completely agree. And the main way that we can make sure that these interlinkages are recognized is by localizing the SDGs and recognizing that every region and every country and every community has different challenges and thereby different solutions. And I, at Green Hope Foundation, we cannot stress enough the importance of the recognition of the interlinkages, because a very common way of thought right now is that you only focus on one issue and one issue only, and there's no other relation to any of the other goals. But if you're working on climate change induced disasters impact the marginalized communities the most, exacerbating their lack of access to food, water, sanitation. We have seen this firsthand, even during COVID-19, health scares and pandemics such as those also ensure that those who are the farthest are impacted most. So it's really, really important, as my predecessor just said, that focusing on Goal 17 and recognizing the partnerships amongst all of the goals, so recognizing the intersectionality amongst not just human beings and social determinants, but also amongst the SDGs, and seeing how we can create this holistic approach towards ensuring that we achieve the sustainable development goals. And that's exactly what we do at Green Hope. And when we see that through education for sustainable development, as I mentioned earlier, that enables us to actually address all of the SDGs, depending on which regions are there, and thereby also create interconnections so that we can truly create that holistic and all-encompassing and multidisciplinary approach towards achieving peaceful and resilient society.
Thank you. Thank you, Heinrich. Is out there. Anybody else has a comment on this SDG, Jean-Paul? Go ahead, Jean-Paul.
Okay. Yes, as I mentioned, if we change mindset to core human values, such as health, for instance, then developing health, it brings us to a group of the sustainable development goals. We can address poverty, we can address food, we can address partnerships, we can address everything, but all together, though we don't look specifically at the interlinkage, but at the umbrella which covers everything. That is actually what is happening now. If we look at certain intentions of, for instance, using sustainocracy to involve people into their own securities, then we can eliminate poverty. Poverty is not the absence of money. It is the absence of the possibility to become self-sufficient. So if we give them that space and the possibility and the instruments to do so, we cover most of the sustainable development goals altogether.
But this question of SDGs, why we are getting sidetracked on it, is the fact that it is very much a people harmony issue because it's behind. But so when you talk of health, in SDG, there is a target for health. There's a target for hunger. There's a target for poverty and so on. So while you said that you can have health and an umbrella, so to go back to the question of interlinkages, it's very important to put together, combine 3-4 goals into a cluster, and you have 4 clusters maybe out of the 16 goals, and maybe we should think along those lines. But it needs to happen because in the MDGs we forgot, and the same problem is going to occur with the SDGs.
But we also need to change our vocabulary. When we talk health in sustainable development goals, then maybe we talk about health care, just health care, or limited factors of health. When I talk about health, it's a much broader scope of health. It's also the social inclusion. It is the social integration. It is that kind of stuff that actually includes development of poverty or elimination of poverty, and also developing the equality. So we do have to change our stories and agree on the type of vocabulary that we used.
But Jean-Paul, we have to communicate to all these people who are working in the UN system for SDGs. We working on the outside need to communicate this, because otherwise in 2030 we will have a new group of targets and sustainability. It's important to communicate. Heinrich.
Yeah, that's oh sorry.
Yes, I think I got it now. It is actually the third slide what we are talking here about. I wrote 5 years ago on the linking between the issues. It is for the global commons cluster that the civil society, the NGOs in the UN, and we did history on how we with youth in East Europe we're addressing the MDGs, and not just into such fancy words like systemic or holistic, but concrete and across scales. And that is actually my work. And I want to show you now a few slides. And it's again not working. And I don't know why. No, I give it up
okay.
For the moment.
All right. But that's an excellent point you made. Anybody else have a comment on this issue of the linkage between people, harmony, and peace, which is the topic of our webinar? Because that also is a very complex issue, that how does peace relate? But of course, if people live in harmony, you have development and you have peace. Because harmony will be not only among people, it will be also harmony with nature. And there is an interesting comment online from Dipali Shah, which she asked that we have universal human rights since 1948. Should we not have universal rights of nature? That discussion has gone on for a decade, and there is it's amazing that even in the one of the outcomes of the pandemic should be that we have to give the rights of nature to nature. And if that doesn't happen, nature is going to strike back. So giving universal rights to nature is critical, although our record of universal human rights after 50 years is still falling well short of what the founders of this declaration were. That is one of the questions. The second question that's also on the online is that more than half the world's population is in the urban areas, and we expect 60-70% in the coming decade. Nature is critical to breathe the fresh air, to build your immunity, to relax, to rejuvenate. So the urban communities, how are they going to find nature? Now, we can take solace that people are building gardens on rooftops and in their homes, but that's not nature. So the question online is that fresh food to eat, and that's expensive. Organic food is expensive. Most people end up buying the cheapest food on the supermarket. And those are the issues of how can we persuade policies in business and in government to produce natural products and have access to nature. Please. Jean-Paul?
Yes. We have been doing a lot of experimentation, obviously, here in Eindhoven also, which is a city. And cities are traditionally cement and concrete and everything, which is very anti-nature. It's not very natural. The thing is, we have also destroyed our countryside with monocultural agriculture and that kind of stuff. So the soil has been destroyed, has been polluted and everything. So going back to that type of nature is complicated because we have to restore some of that life of that nature. So we have to give it space. So what we have as a step in between is to see how can we create the cities as a kind of an ecosystem, not just a black hole of consumerism, but as where people and technology and the and initiatives come together and produce food together at walking and biking distance. Aquaponics, the rooftop stuff, also in the streets, producing food and everything is something that is happening nowadays as something, a stimulus of the people. Everything you can produce yourself in the neighborhood together, you don't have to buy. And obviously a force of difference here between those who have the interest in money and dependence on money and the ones who want to be self-sufficient. We have, I think if we talk about human rights, we have to give the think of the human right to be self-sufficient and not just dependent. So here in the city, we've been experimenting with both this, giving space back to nature outside the city and then working together with nature and then bringing some technology in as a temporary source to create a kind of an ecosystem of involvement of people to work together on food resilience.
Thank you. Thank you. I have a leading question from that to Dusty. Nature in Australia, when we saw the koala on fire, the trees, the commitment of Australia to climate change, and the Australians' love of the underwater world, the Australian love of the outback. So how are you going to create nature in this environment and create that world of nature for people to thrive? Dusty.
Well, that's a really good question. Oh, you mean Cheryl or Dusty?
Dusty is not here. Dusty is not here. Okay. Cheryl, yes.
We've got a very, very large country, which is the size of the US, actually, but it's very dry, and it's the driest country on Earth, I think, next to Antarctica. And South Australia is the driest state in the driest country in the world. We've just had a bushfire commission, actually, which finished a couple of days ago, and they had some scathing remarks with the government's climate change policy. So we're hoping that there's going to be some big changes. We're reasonably lucky because we are so far from everything and the land is so big, there's lots of space for us. Most of it's trying to kill us most of the time, but we try to just carry a big stick and most of the time we're okay. So, I mean, I live a kilometre from the beach and I count myself very, very lucky. And during the COVID, you know, for us, it was nowhere near as bad as what it was for people in high density areas. But I suppose the biggest problem is you've got to create a shift in the government to move from a GDP and on economic growth to reframe it in actual, you know, like New Zealand is doing, thinking about the gross domestic happiness measurement instead, you know, to have their population thrive rather than expand and grow economically. So I think we have to have a big shift in how we measure the success of an economy. And I think once we start doing that, we have an understanding of where we fit with nature, that we have 60 years of arable soil left and we have 40 years of water left. I think people are going to start getting panicky in a few more years and they can start paying attention.
So you have a good example almost near your foot in New Zealand, a small country with a big project. Heinrich, I see your hand.
Yes, I give it another and maybe last try. You see, Gregory Bateson said, we have to develop antennas for time horizons. We are bringing together short-term, mid-term, long-term. Or I have here my hourglass. So you see it's 1, 3, 5 minutes. There we see how time is running out, as we say it with the Dalai Lama for the high plateau. So how do we communicate not just different temporal scales, but spatial scales? Jean-Claude just mentioned something very, very important. It is important to work not just on your personal level, but also on the urban level. But to bring all this together, I hope I can open now a certain slide. Yes, can you see it?
It's coming up. Yes, there it is.
Okay. You see, this we did with on the Konrad Lorenz Institute on evolutionary cognition, what they also call now emergence, something which is intuitive but also rational and spiritual. On the left, downstairs, is the first figure of the Club of Rome report, 72. It shows that there are spatial and temporal scales, and the most dots, I don't know if you see my cursor, the most dots is where the people are with their interests, short term and my family. But they write, especially Donella Meadows, that the Club of Rome report was on the upper quadrant, which is long view, big picture. And then when we discussed with that, then the people with the father of general system theory, Paul Weiss, said, no, there are actions between the cells and the organs and the body and the community and humanity in all. So we have to really take on an extra perspective, take on the macro view, and that is my work. And I'm again not able to share slides in this program. We didn't test it, sorry. There's something awfully wrong. I tried to convert it to PDF and then try again, but I'm actually fed up with this technology.
We will do it in the next session, 15 November, if you're in town. So can I ask Yuri, put you a little bit on the spot? We talk of nature, and the biggest depository of nature is the Amazon. And you have done some amazing work on the water world in the Amazon. And the water world and the forests is what creates the wealth of diversity in the Amazon. So not putting you on the spot, but from your own practical experiences, what would you say that how do we preserve this? Because it's not only turning it into food production or soya production, but there is a market for that. And the question I mentioned at the outset, that why shouldn't the world pay for this carbon filter to be preserved for the world? It's a tax on the world to have an air filter for the world. Over to you, Yuri.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, just a few words about the Amazon. Actually, I'm going to show some pictures. We made a movie in 2017, the first IMAX movie about the Amazon, the Brazilian Amazon, and it's been showing around the world since that time. It's an amazing region. It's like a huge place, but if there's a real danger, if we don't control what's happening now, the fires and now the deforestation, it could become a Caatinga. There's a study saying Caatinga is a Brazilian desert-like biome. So we have a real threat that the Amazon, all those forests could become a desert in not so long future. It's going to be very short if we don't control that. And of course, the Amazon also controls not only the Brazilian or the atmosphere, it also dictates the rain in the south of Brazil, because the Amazon, there's a thing called the flying rivers. All this humidity from the Amazon, from the trees breathing, they are brought into the jet streams and goes to the Andes, okay, the high mountains in Peru and Bolivia, and then they come to the south. So there will be no rain in the south. So it could be a major disaster if you don't take care of that. And just to show a few pictures of what we made in this IMAX movie, it's really amazing, this place. And here's the pink dolphins. You can go swim down there, over there in the rivers. This is the Black Rio Negro. So the real question is, I think the whole planet has to take charge. Of course, it's Brazilian. It belongs to Brazil and seven different countries. But it's not only a South American problem. It's a worldwide problem. If you lose the Amazon, there will be trouble for everybody. Actually, we have a project going on. We are developing a project. We intend to make a documentary talk about this, showing all the different ecosystems that make the Amazon. It starts in the Andes in Peru, the high mountains, the glaciers, and goes down different rivers until it gets to the ocean. So we intend to document the whole length of the Amazon, which some people believe is the longest river in the world now, because there's a new source up in Peru. So this is a shot of us doing our IMAX movie, and our movie being shown down the world. I think it's part of this, and this is Vera, my wife. You have to bring to people digested knowledge, okay, not only scientific, but have digested and bring it to the common folk, what they can do, how they can impact nature locally, of course. And that's what we do. That's what we intend to do with this webinar and, of course, our productions. We have to show Thank people you. That they can do something about that.
Thank you.
Here's the whole way.
Excellent. Yeah. 2 points. Vera Sanada, I know she's online. And would have been nice, Vera, to have you tell us a little bit about your own experience traveling and being in all the experiments with Yuri. I have a question for Upeme. Would it be politically incorrect? Would it be economically incorrect to ask the global community to pay? Perhaps tax is not the right word, to pay a preservation fee to preserve nature around the world. And Amazon leads, but yes, Malaysia, Indonesia, it's all over the place. And every time concrete is moving into nature. So as an ambassador of peace, and we need this rights of nature, because if we don't have these rights of nature, we will go on destroying it. So how would you put it politically and economically to make a case to the world? Because this is the forgotten part. And remember, the pandemic came from whatever happened in nature. whether it was bats or something else. Please, Ukeme.
Thank you. That's an interesting task. But I will attempt it by saying that we are the world. And because we are interconnected, regardless of where we come from, regardless of our government, we owe a global responsibility to each other to ensure that the work that we do or the mission that we have is a common one. And we have interconnected problems in the world, because anywhere in the world, there's a rippling effect. Where there is problem in the world, where there is injustice anywhere in the world, it has a rippling effect in other parts of the world. So from the peace aspect, my thinking will be that justice, there are so many connected issues when you talk about how we can achieve peace. And you can't talk about peace if you're not talking about justice, if you're not talking about equity, if you're not talking about intercultural harmony, among other things. So for governments, I wouldn't castigate anybody. But what I would say is that this is the time. The time is actually now for us to retrace our steps, for us to be very inclusive in the solutions that we seek. Bring the stakeholders, bring everyone to the table. And it's not all about talking now. The time is time for action, individual and collective action. Let us see all this divisiveness in all its ramifications. And let us now think of how engage the youth, engage even children, engage the environment. Because if we are talking about harmony, we are talking about human rights here, nature rights too. Let's talk to the trees, let's talk to the air, let's talk to the seas. Let's see, because if we have harmony in the world, for instance, if we uphold human rights, if we don't uphold the rights of the elements, then we can't have that peace. We can't have that interrelatedness that we seek. So for governments, for individuals, for communities, it's collective action. And the time is now. Thank you.
It's 60 minutes. And please don't walk away. So Jean-Paul, you have the floor.
Yes, I love that speech about we are all in it together. That's exactly what I'm saying. You know, we are all in it together, and let's bring it together. But look at this group here. We are a group of people. People are watching, and then let's take responsibility together. Let's create a project. Let's create something that comes out of this. And instead of telling everybody, United Nations or governments or whatever, what they have to do, let's show what we are doing together and invite them to participate and let it grow.
Yeah, but
that's what I would like to say.
It's all right. Upeme, who is a lawyer as well as ambassador of peace, she said about castigating governments. The fact is, we elect our governments. We have the power of the thumb to change that. We have the wallet to force businesses. So at the individual level, and we have been talking about climate change, extinction of species, pollution, ocean, everything, we wait for the government, we wait for the philanthropists, we wait for businesses. Unless every individual changes on the ground and commits, and that requires school of life education in the home, because our colleges and universities are not teaching that. And that is really the challenge. And you're right, Jean-Paul. Let's start the movement on the ground and see how we can go. Yuri, you have your hand. Yuri?
No, I think we have Heiner wants to talk.
Please, Heiner.
Santania said, "Your foot should be on the ground, but your eyes should survey the world." So I'm fully with you, Mahendra. We have to go into education, but education across scales and times and cultures and values. And that is the big challenge. What Upeme said is right. Do it yourself, do it at home, but we have also the duty to see the context. And that's why I prepared today for multi-track diplomacy and peacemaking. When you have conflicts, then it is important that the community comes together and they weigh this against that. And what are the root causes? What are the deep drivers? And that is this 21st century Agora movement I wanted to present about. They have been pushed forward by the North American Indians to sit in a circle and then discuss between the tribes or the tribes with the government in Washington. And this need of going to the root causes is very, very much needed. Otherwise, we stay in the slot of one sector, one time, one tribe. And it's very challenging to just question me and how I educate my children, but to really integrate across scales, what Noel Brown said, common frames of references. This is a challenge. Otherwise, we have to go back with Eleanor Ostrom to one valley or one island, and the other people rule the world. This cannot be. We have to really take our own viewpoint out and include the micro and the macro. And I'm not going to show anything more without pictures. But it's really, really tricky and perplexing because this technological drives, we in future studies says can implies odd. We have to have the right questions, giving it to the people that they can make value decisions. Anyway, it's more perplexing than we can put in words. And the meanings of the words are very important. That's why I brought my t-shirt. You see, love and peace is easy, but liberty means for whom liberty? For goods traveling over borders? Or is it personal liberty? Or the liberty of my nation as my nation first? So you see, it is very important what we mean by critical terms like crisis, values, liberty.
The word you use, liberty, you mentioned travel. You know, during these lockdowns, we think we can live digitally. That's not what life is all about. We have to travel. And don't tell us that we will travel within the European borders. It's safe, it's secured. People want to go all over the world, and that is part of the reason that we have to build harmony between people, because anybody who goes to Bali or who goes to New Zealand comes back and said, what beautiful people. Why can we not learn from this? So it's very important that we don't hide behind this climate change and air miles and the fuel, because the cost of that is insignificant in the long run when you count it all together. In this six, we are under 10 people with such diversity, such wealth, such views from the ground to the space. And this is the kind of dialogue that needs to occur in this international negotiations forum, and it doesn't. You know, I have attended more than 250 hunger conferences, not a single in the last four decades. I have never been to one conference out of 250 where the voice of hunger and the face of hunger was present in that negotiating forum. And this is very important. Now, we have Marion from Marion Van Dyne. She made two statements, and I need to read this to you. Evaluation of humanity, because it touches exactly on the point we are discussing. Evaluation of humanity by exploring working of our minds and consciousness, managing our beliefs, connecting again with our heart, and finding a higher goal for our planet and for our humanity. Let us act from personal personal and global responsibility with compassion, service to each other and the planet. Now, after this, we have another 20 minutes. There's a question that I want to give to every panel member, and you can spend 5 minutes answering that one specific question. But I just want to add here again that Jean-Paul and I, at the last meeting, we discussed female energy, male energy. The fact remains that our maker, whoever that is, when he gives the responsibility to a woman to give birth and to nourish that child up to the age of 8, and after that, dad takes him to the football. It is between 0 and 3 or 0 and 8 when the networks in the mind are built. This responsibility has been given to women to nurture the next generation. And yes, men also have female energy, but if you add up all the energies that a man has, female and male, the amount, and a woman has, you will find it still comes out at 50-50 overall. And that's why we need to bring women and girls to the tables, because they have the compassion, they have the empathy, which we don't have for some reason. And a simple example of that is, if you have a mad person with a knife standing in front of you and said, "I'm going to kill," well, you send a man in there to negotiate, and you send a simple woman with a smile and a sparkling eyes, the chances are that the man with the knife will put it down when the woman is negotiating. So that was going aside a little bit, but that's an important aspect for us to consider. Now, here is the question which needs thinking and a little bit of answering. So the question is to every panel member here. Each panel member, please choose one top problem or reason why you believe in your research of why sustainability has not progressed as intended. And it has not progressed as intended over 5 decades, which is the working life of everyone on this panel here. So, is the question clear? What is the top problem or reason why they believe your research of why sustainability has not progressed? We start with Dusty. Cheryl.
Or Cheryl. Yeah, it's okay. You can call me Dusty.
I'm going to team you up to illustrate it next time. Cheryl.
It's okay. Human nature, unfortunately, pits us against each other for resources, and that's pretty much it, I think, because our human nature is going to drive us to want something more, something better. We've got all those negative things going on. We've got envy, we've got greed, we've got lust. We want what our neighbor has, and these are human things, unfortunately. And we need to find a way to manage the conflict, manage the egos. But until we can actually calm that inner voice that makes us want and that we listen to, unfortunately, I don't think we really have a chance. I really don't think we have a chance. We're up against it, our own natures. And up until now, the world has been this bountiful cornucopia which just keeps giving and giving and giving and giving. So our resources that we're just taking and taking and taking, and there's been no need to change. But now again, the world probably doesn't. We have 60 years of arable soil and 40 years of water left. And I think adversity will bring us together, but near the end, unfortunately. It's depressing, doesn't it? Sorry about
Heinrich,
that.
The positives of it, please.
I think we have mentioned here a lot the value and the personal behavior and also the impact of the humane information society, where the computers are dumping us down. But for me, one central issue is how to make it concrete, like Jean Gebs said, only the concrete can be integrated. We are in our echo chambers, filter bubbles, always with big data, creating big noise, and everything is out of context. So I feel this I architectures, where I work with young people on integrating worms eye, fish eye, bird's eye, group eye, generational eye, taking many eyes in or many senses in, it's important. If not, we don't have the same language. And this languaging we mentioned already a moment ago. We have to be aware that to be a decision maker, you have to take over responsibility and be aware of the inflictions of suffering you include. And this is very, very important, because then you think you have only one ruler who runs the world. No, we have to have a rotation of governance, that nobody stays in forever and his family, that we come to other mediation and policy making structures. And I feel the main point is that the Club of Rome, but also the UN, has forgotten that Yehezkel Dror wrote the books on the capacity to govern and Earth literate leadership. We have to take our own ego, our own viewpoint out to be able to govern. And this is totally, for me, a blind spot. We have people who just jump in and out, try to get re-elected, but never have heard about extrapolation, have never heard about the intersectorial strategic dilemmas, never heard on all the issues which are necessary in all these languages. So we should have a kindergarten for politicians, and if we don't get to that, then we are all muddling through in our sweet isolation.
But Heinrich, we have moved so far away from multilateralism to unilateralism. I mean, look at this pandemic. We couldn't have a protocol for the, even for Europe, which is one unit, to have a common policy on face mask or on working together to produce the vaccine. And doing the mass trials, instead, every company and every nation has its investments to deal with this. But the issue, the question I asked, Upeme, please, you pick up on that, because this is really the challenge that we need to make it happen. We need to work together. We have to come together. And unfortunately, when Heinrich says, we have to elect the ruler of the world, the person that will rule. Well, that election need to be carried out by a vote for each person alive on this planet Earth. And in this, we will have to go to the indigenous tribes in the Amazon and ask them to vote also. So, Upeme, please.
Okay, thank you. I'll just summarize in three points. The first one is a lack of zeal for imbibing and practicing values. So if we keep talking about peace and asking people to work for peace or asking people to work for a sustainable environment, if they are not passionate about it, how are they going to do it? So the zeal is really important. We can't bring people together who don't believe in what it is that they are advocating. So if people are advocating peace, they have to believe in peace. So, like, I believe peace is possible. So that is what gives me also the inspiration to continue my peace work. So the lack of zeal has to be tackled. people have to be passionate about what they are doing. And secondly, understanding the dynamics of sustainability. So if sustainability, if people need to be taught, you know, the different dynamics or the different, or just understanding the strategies of sustainability. So like what we are doing here, I really applaud us and for our collaborators who do this, the kind of work that we do. So education plays a major role in this sustainability issue. We need to create more awareness for people to really understand the environment, to understand themselves, to understand how they can come together as volunteers or whatever it is, in whatever capacity. So education is important. So the dynamics of sustainability, we need to teach. And thirdly, human divisiveness and a disregard for the Earth system. These are three areas that we can focus to ensure that we have a sustainable
Yuri,
world.
Do you want to comment?
Yeah. Yes. The Arabs, they have a saying. They say that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Right? Like Cheryl said, we are facing the biggest threat to mankind. I mean, we are facing a common enemy, which is extinction of the human race. I think the planet will endure, the planet will remain if you are eliminated from the equation. But the thing is, it's funny, you think that a threat like the pandemic, like the coronavirus, you unite mankind towards a goal to find a vaccine and save everybody. It didn't help. And what happens, the politicians are using that to gain power to their little tribes. And that's very sad. So I think we have to rethink our model. And I think in the future, if we have a common enemy again, once this coronavirus is defeated, we should be more ready to act as a human species and try to help that. And of course, the nature, the way we are treating nature, we're destroying nature now. And that's going to get back to us. We have maybe, like Cheryl said, 50 years of resource, and then that's it. I don't think we're going to be able to, colonize Mars or other planets before that. So we are in face of danger. But like somebody here said, we have to teach people, have to educate them that we have a common enemy. And the enemy is us. It's our actions. We have to get together. We have to think clearly and have a path for the future. I don't think we have to rely on the politicians because they're all interested in gaining power for the sake of gaining power. And that's it. I think we have to do that ourselves. The society has to come as a unity and deal with this life-threatening, extinction danger for the human race.
Jean-Paul, before I call on you, to remind you of the question that was asked, choose one top problem or reason why you believe in your research why sustainability has not progressed as intended? That's the question.
I understand the question, and responding obviously is has different choices. The word choice I've used already is, as far as I'm concerned, mindset. Historically, we've all come into a particular mindset because of the way we evolved from agriculture towards city type life and industrial processes, consumerism, which came afterwards. The mindset is that with money, we can solve everything. We ourselves, we go to the supermarket, water comes from the tap, where we take energy coming from the switch, whatever. It is like it is made easy with money. We've created for ourselves a kind of a fake El Dorado, a fake Garden of Eden, which is only accessible through money. And we've given away all this Garden of Eden type of facilitation to institutions. And those institutions gain power, and all the thing, they use the human beings as labor force, and they use the planet as resources to produce and sustain this fake kind of Garden of Eden. The problem is they want to save themselves. They want to save themselves and keep continuing with this destruction, which is a collateral damage to their self-interest. So if we want to really understand, the mindset needs to be that this Garden of Eden is fake. that the real Garden of Eden is Eden is something which we call here nature. The awareness is something that you cannot demand from people, because there are a lot of people who do not even see it. They don't even actually, it doesn't even come across to them that they have their own responsibility, because it just hobble along on their along this comfort zone of this fake Garden of Eden, which is existing. So calling onto awareness really requires a step beforehand, and crises like this, like the corona crisis or the financial crisis of 2008, opens up the mind of people that there are different realities, and that the reality of the fakeness is breaking into pieces and something coming shining through, which is the real reality that we are facing. But that real reality is what has been said before. You know, it's like we have created this desert. We've destroyed everything. We have to take responsibility of letting it grow and back to the real Garden of Eden and get to that type of understanding. But that is something that we have to do ourselves. So for me, mindset is key. And that is not that 7 billion people who are there. There's a limited amount of people who have actually got to that particular mindset. If those people actually take responsibility to join forces and create that new type of real Garden of Eden in collaboration with nature, and not trying to play God, but creating some kind of symbiosis, then we go step by step, go forward. So for me, it is mindset.
So it's very important, the mindset. We have another two or three comments which talk about we need the right language of communication. And a lot of this misconceptions come from the language of communication. And language doesn't mean words. Language means eye contact. Language means touch. Language means breathing the same air and feeling the emotions. So again, we should not be running back into this background again. And I'm going to give Cheryl and Henrik, if he wants the floor, but I also want, with your permission, to answer the question. I think Henrik has just left, perhaps. But Cheryl, please.
Just a really quick one. Again, we went through the starving African children. We went through the starving polar bear. We've gone through the oceans of plastic, and it hasn't been enough to change the consumer, and it hasn't been enough to change the industry. So there needs to be some catalyst for change. And the pandemic is a really good start, because it's certainly, you know, when these things are under threat, your values make quite clear what's really important to you. And a lot of people went, you know, we'll circle the wagons, we'll bring our family close. This is important to me. Food is important to me. Security is important to me. So it's a really good start. And it sounds terrible to say, but it was a bit of a wake-up call. This is the first of the pandemics in our lifetime, the first. And if we don't change our ways, but if it's not relevant to them, if they can't see an impact on the quality of their life, they're not going to make change. I've been watching behavior change for 15 years in the job that I do. People don't change unless there is an absolute need for them to do so. And even people who've had heart attacks, you know, 30% of them don't change their lifestyle after they've had a heart attack. So, again, this is human nature that we have to deal with. It has to be relevant to them. So we can talk in these vague terms of the world being 4 or 5 degrees hotter in 40 years' time, and it's not enough to move them. So we have to be clear in our language that this is going to impact not just them, it's going to be their children. And also we need to create those influencers and change makers to give them the skills to influence the people in their circles. So we have to be the ones to create the change makers and give them that support to make the change. Yeah.
For me, if I may answer that question, why sustainability has not progressed. I had the privilege to attend all the summits on sustainable development, starting with 1972 at Stockholm, 87 with Brundtland in Our Common Future, 92 Rio, 2002 Johannesburg, MDGs, SDGs, in all of them. These are 7-8 summits, and then there are hundreds of conferences in between. Every time we produce agenda after agenda after agenda, And then we fail to get the resources, and there is hardly ever any action. The fundamental reason why sustainability has not moved is lack of actions. And it is this which led Yuri and I to sit together here in Zen Resort Bali and think that why don't we create a celebration of the anniversary, the 30th anniversary of Rio 92. And by 2022, create 60 panels around the world of youths, 50% youths and 50% adults, government, scientists, and so on, to focus on actions. And so we are doing a global input of videos from telephones on what are the sustainability solutions and problems on the ground. And the Earth Odyssey project is built around the world action. That's the only word we want. And we are running out of time, and we need to do this action. Our children march for climate change. You would think the parents would have tears in their eyes to see 8 and 10 year olds marching. But we have lost our humanity in all this selfishness, in self-interest. So we need to focus here on for the decade or two, which is the time over which things may get even worse, with actions and everything we do. And actions also means choosing priorities and finding where the speed will be the best to achieve. So this is the message of Earth Odyssey, and that's the mission of Earth Odyssey. And we want, all of you are working on wonderful things, but let us find an umbrella where we can come together and combine our synergies, our ideas, our intellect, our commitment, and our will to make it happen. Ciao, Paul.
I think out of this dialogue that we've had all together, there are two main things that I think could be a mission that we share together. The first one is education, and education showing and opening up the minds of our youngsters that have not been too much indoctrinated yet by dogmas and stuff, and giving them the possibility to think in a broader perspective than just the limitations of a job or participating in an old reality, which is obsolete right now, and that we open them up for their creativity to actually work together on creating that resilience that is necessary for themselves, and obviously as a consequence for their generation and the generation to come. Now, the second point that you mentioned is, together with Yuri, and I'm working together with filmmakers too, that we show the good examples, that we show them the positive steps that people are actually undertaking, that this is being shared with the world, and that we actually use that to reinforce the statement of can do, that the actions are there, but you just have to visualize them. And visualize them together so that it's that it's growing, but it's also getting the participation of the institutions that are trying to uphold themselves, and they do need also the incentive to participate with us.
2 minutes, and that's a signal. We can go on discussing, but I think we have to put a limit, because we need to move on and start thinking about actions, because that is what is going to help us change. So I really, before I give the floor to Yuri and to Yupeme, I want to thank, we were a small group, we have some really good questions, and some questions that we will reply in writing. And we look forward to this. Next webinar will be on nature harmony, people, nature, harmony. And then we move on to people, harmony, and nature. Building up after 6 seminars to a case of the imperative for sustainable development actions. And that's the avenue we want to take. And it's a privilege to work with all of you. And thank you. And we are taking the first step. And let's continue on this journey. Yuri.
Okay, just want to say thank you, everybody. It's been great talking to you and listening to you, because it's the message here is very clear. The message, like Mahendra said and all the others, is action. We have to act. We have to act and educate people. Like Jean-Paul said, yeah, movies. We have to use movies toward that. Our movie Amazon Adventure, we show in 40 countries for many, many months. So since 2017, and really, in some people that are open to have receive the message, it could be a game changer to have the proper information. So yeah, let's act and let's think about intelligent, modern ways of communicate what we need to people, so they can join us and together we can make this a better world. Thank you.
And with fairness, Upeme, you have the last word.
I thank everyone. I thank our wonderful speakers for their insightful presentations. We are thankful to all the listeners and those who have watched this webinar. I believe that a humane, harmonious, and peaceful world is possible, and it begins with us. Thank you.
Just one final comment that just came in from Ragini, and she is saying that please bring the children and youth, the younger side, also in one of your seminars, webinars. Thank you. Thank you so much. And till we meet again soon.
Join us at earthodyssey.org. And sign our YouTube channel at youtube.com-earthodyssey.